Yeah. I think that what I'm trying to do, my endeavor is to put up or shut up. In other words, this is I'm dealing with hard data here,
mm-hmm.
and my quest, Bill, is to find those creditable people out there with information who might be willing to talk. Now, this mm-hmm. is one of the problems, because most of the people who have been involved in a retrieval operation, military, of course, or had been in an opportune position to see the craft and the bodies, most of them are under some kind of oath, security oath.
There is that great security oath, and it's a formidable thing.
And it is formidable, because to get through that is very difficult. It takes much time. It takes some expense to track these people down, to get them willing to relate, and then usually on the condition that you'll never reveal their name or identity, you will get the information or part of it. Of course, the difficulty there, Bill, is for me to translate that to the public and say, well, I got 15, 20, 25 people who told me such and such, but I can't give you the name or the identity. And see, that makes my case a case of hearsay.
Would you like to go over just the high points of what that oath?
Certain other specifics in there too, that you could lose your pension, you could do all sorts of little things like that that are the type of thing to make one disinclined to relate.
Well, basically, doesn't the person, you lose all of your pensions and your benefits.
That's right, you lose all of that.
Yeah, all of that.
And all the indignities.
You're looking forward to a jail sentence.
Very conceivable, yes.
And you're looking forward to also a charge of felonious which is a firing squad offense, by the way.
I think even more dangerous than a jail sentence, which would be an obvious thing, is the fact that you just suddenly disappear.
Yeah, now, we have cases
I hate that. To say this, but I mean, in my work, I have, in the last, 4 years, there's an amazing number of people who have surfaced to me who have never resurfaced, and I can't even locate them. And I don't know what that means. I'm not suggesting that they've been eliminated, but I don't know. This completely mystifies me, and I have hunted some of these people down, and there have been close to a dozen people who just seem like they vanished from Earth after they related the information to me, and that does bother me. And that is a fact, because I know what I'm doing the people I've talked with, and I know where they were at one time, but when they've been completely uprooted.
And I know who I've talked with.
And, and the story is the same. It's the same scenario. In my new paper coming out, this is a sequel to the Getty Report, which you're familiar with.
Sure.
The whole package relates one of fear from the informant. From the beginning until he either disappears or says he can't talk anymore or whatever other reason that comes up that he can no longer relate. Now, some of them may last a year before they just vanish, and some of them you may get in one phone call or one meeting, and that's it. And this bothers me, and because I realize what I'm doing is a very sensitive thing. And I don't care to transgress or to get involved with security. I mean, I'm a good, loyal American citizen. It's not that. I'm not a rebel of any sort. But the thing is, it does bother me that somewhere out there is a sinister force that seems to control these people with information. And that, I must say, I have experienced. I know. And I've endured a few little threats here and there, too, but I
understand,
because I think I'm well enough known in this phase of research if anything should happen to me, why too many people would be able to speak up.
Leonard, I want you to hold it there for just a second.
Sure.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, though, I want to talk about that force and why it's there. Afterward, let's talk about some of the hardcore things that you have uncovered with the crashed UFO.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And And let me say to this audience that we have here, which is rather vast tonight, that there are crashed UFOs. There is a cover-up going on the part of our own government. We are not being dealt with fairly. That's just the, you know, you want to take me to court? Take me to court. I think we can prove that. I just said it in front of a million people. You take me to court. I'd be more than happy to go there because I would love to get it there as far as that goes. And with me is Leonard Stringfield. Leonard has probably is the foremost investigator in this particular area of this particular phenomenon and this particular phenomenon of our own government doing it to us as far as that goes, and we really don't need that. I'll be back with you in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Talk Radio AM. Coast to coast, and there are, you know, millions of people that listen to them, and when they get their nighttime package together, we're hoping that Open Mind will be
success there, because I would enjoy relating subject on that program. Actually, it'd be a good test.
You'll be one of the first people on. Yeah.
Well, we're sitting on the biggest story ever to happen on Earth. You know, it just overshadows the problems in the Middle East, the Hague's,
It's our child's play.
You know, the Argentine situation. All these things are.
All that
are
aside.
Minor.
It really is child's play. What's going on around there?
And I think that you know, I studied this. I try to be objective with myself. I had to be truthful to myself because I had to sleep with myself. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what reasons do we have for secrecy? And you know, there are many premises. And of course, the popular one is the fear of panic. World governments decide that psychologically we couldn't take it, philosophically or religiously, economically we couldn't do it. We just couldn't stand up to the facts.
Well, those,
I think that's worn out now.
Those thoughts came out of the Brookings Institute
that's right.
A long time ago, whenever government was first confronted with the fact that we did have alien beings in our presence.
I think it would affect a certain percent of people. I think that maybe even 1% might jump off the bridge somewhere. But you know, those people would jump for other reasons anyway. So another reason for secrecy would be technological, of course.
Well,
to cover up our own progress in duplicating the craft.
Well, we've talked about this, and perhaps this does make some sense before.
That would be a good reason for secrecy.
If we have found a crashed UFO here in the United States, which indeed we have done, and the Soviets have found one, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
What that represents is a leg up on technology that is far beyond what any of our nuclear weapon or psychotronic weapon systems or all of those other weapon systems that we have come up with. I mean, it makes all of those child's play if we can crack that nut.
Yes, anti-gravity, for instance.
Yeah, the anti-gravity thing, the being able to jump through space. The technology there is enormous. If we're able to take a crashed UFO and work with it the best we can for maybe 20 or 30 years, if we crack it, that is a technological advance that is unparalleled in history.
That's right. So that could be one reason, plus the fear of panic. You combine the two. Now, another reason, Bill, is that perhaps even though we have the craft and so forth, we may not have all, our government may not have all the facts about the intent, the purpose for them being here.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, not knowing that may give them reason to believe that relating this to the public, if they don't have the final information, may cause more concern to the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The fear of the unknown.
This fear I was getting back to, Leonard, is if our government let it be known that, yeah, we had the craft and we were studying them,
mm-hmm.
Would that probably take a Soviet Union, would that say, hey, we're going to predispose of their ability to put that technology into production by some sort of a strike,
mm-hmm.
because now we're in trouble?
Right. It could cause a lot of things unpredictable because the Russian, you know, we have everything geared for a major war on both sides, and something like that may just touch off the button over there to start a war before we got too far with our technology. I'm just guessing.
Well, that's a guess.
So anyway, these are all things I think we have to take into consideration, the reasons for secrecy. And, of course, it's been brought up many times to me by different people, that maybe it is not the government really controlling it after all. Maybe they're just the one end of it. Maybe it is a powerful international controlling force, big money. behind it. But then there are a lot of weaknesses there. I mean, I can see greed would be the purpose there. But it doesn't make much sense why they would keep that from the public just to keep everything intact, the status quo intact, because the world is not intact. But by other reasons, you know.
Keep everybody's head in the sand.
Yeah, so that doesn't stack up. Well, I've heard this sort of information has haunted me for years, that, you know, some big, powerful, controlling force is behind it all. Then, of course, the other reason is that these things have been ours all along. You know, they've been our secret weapon since World War II.
Right.
I can't buy that anymore because that may have been a good reason to believe that back in the early 50s that we had something under development. But I can't believe that we would keep that sort of a thing, massive scale, that secret for 35, 40 years.
No, I think if...
And mass production, you know what I mean?
I
just can't see that we would have...
It seems to me that if we had that kind of technology at our disposal, we would have used that kind of technology, and we wouldn't be having the problems we're having right now.
Well, if we had it way back in the early 50s, then how come we didn't use it in the Vietnam War? Which
was a
total disgrace, you know what I mean? There would have been a good chance to to use something of that type. What are we saving it for? The big war, you know, I mean, that doesn't make sense either. So I just can't buy even though I do believe that we're trying to duplicate the thing with some degree of success, I can't believe that is the answer to the whole UFO riddle.
But we do have UFOs in our possession.
Yes.
According to your information.
Yes, I have good reason to believe, unless all these people are misinforming me, that we do have the craft and have had it.
Going
way back to the 50s.
Probably 47.
47, 48, in the United States, also Mexico. And they were retrieved, according to various informants that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way through the 50s and into the 60s and into the 70s.
Well, you know, we've had the man who would have dropped the third atomic bomb, who was the commander of Roswell Air Force Base, a four-star Air Force general, who's talked openly and freely now, he's on in his years at this point in time, about the crashed UFO near Roswell, New Mexico.
Yes.
And he has talked how the government covered it up, how this frightened Harry Truman, how it frightened General LeMay.
Yes.
And General LeMay lives right here near us. He's in Hillsville.
He's near you.
He's right down in Newport Beach. And, you know, he's a... We hope he gets a lot better, and one of these days we hope he will talk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he would have a lot to say.
He's under the same restriction.
Certainly. He's,
and even more so obligation on his end than a lot of other people because of his position.
But a lot of these men who have been living with this now for 25, 30, 40 years
mm-hmm.
are getting on in age, and they say it is not to the best interest of the American people or the people of this planet to keep it secret any longer. But anyway, you have, you know, that particular gentleman there who was the commander of that Air Force base, which, you know, it doesn't sound like one. Little Air Force base in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Mm-hmm. It happened to have been the only base that was training in nuclear weaponry at the time, so that made it the most important Air Force base in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he freely talks about the collection of the crashed UFO, the nine bodies aboard, how the government covered it up, how they sent a weather balloon over to Roswell Air Force, or to Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, deluded the public. The Los Angeles Times printed in April, I think it was, of 1947, UFO crashes in New Mexico.
Yes.
And the Los Angeles Times was right on that particular headline.
Mm-hmm.
And the cover-up went on.
It's a continuing thing right up to this day. And the those that have crashed in recent years get the same treatment. And what I've done here in this paper is compiled case histories.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in this paper, I had the original copy before me. I have 12 first-person reports. And then I have in the second section of the paper is what I call the intermediary report.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those, that is, people that were so frightened to relate to me, they can only relate through a intermediary, the type of information they wish to.
We've had some of them on the air here, Larry.
They feel safer that way. Now, knowing, in this case, And that type of report, I must know the intermediary and how responsible he is. Well, in practically all instances here, the intermediaries are outstanding people, so I have every reason to believe them. But the stories they relate from their informant, the witness, again, it's very astounding. Those who, again, participated in retrieval operations or had occasion to see the bodies and or the craft in hangars or in the field or wherever, or have worked on them. And those who have seen the bodies, well, my main source in my previous paper was a medical doctor who informed me that he had performed an autopsy. Now, he is high on staff with a major eastern hospital. He has a colleague who also is on staff, a chemist. I've talked to them. I've been to the doctor's home. I know what he's relayed to me. He's given me a report to publish, minus his name and, of course, the name of the hospital. I published this, Bill, in my second status report, my second paper, which has been out now for 2.5 years. I think what he has given me, I can't find any reason why he would be misleading me, is very astounding, because he describes the body. And I'll do that a little later if we get into that section where you want to talk about the bodies a little bit, where I'll read what he had sent me for the publication.
I tell you what we'll do, Leonard. We have a lot of time. We've got an hour and a half here to go. I want to take just a little bit of break. I want to invite the people now. You can start calling in. We will talk to you about the Christ UFO. There are many of them in the United States and around the world. About the bodies that have been found. About the fact that the government is lying to us about it. For whatever their reasons. And they may have what they feel are good reasons, but nevertheless they are. And that's why you and I are here doing our thing. I don't believe a thing that they say about the UFO phenomenon. And you're talking to probably one of the world's greatest experts on it, and that's Leonard Stringfield. He is my guest tonight on Open Mind. And if you are under the impression that we do not have crashed UFOs in our possession here in the United States, you're wrong. And we can prove that. Leonard's papers prove that, and you can get a copy of them. We'll tell you how to do that a little bit later on. We'd love to get it in a court, you know, so that they could talk about it there if they will.
I don't think it'll happen.
It just won't happen. They'll never put that in a court.
No.
Because then now they're going to have to talk. But it is a fact of life. It is one of those things we're going to have to learn how to cope with. And you can't cope with reality until you understand what it is. And what I don't understand is why our own forces at B are not telling us what is going on in a very official way. They are wrong, and they are dead wrong. I'll be back in just a moment with Leonard Stringfield, and we'll continue. We have a lot of them in various places. And if you'd like to talk to Leonard about that, you certainly are welcome to. Let me give you the numbers first, and so you can get in and talk to us, okay? If you're calling from the main Los Angeles area, dial 520, followed by the word talk. T-A-L-K. Talk is the word. It follows all of our numbers. For the San Fernando Valley, dial 990. And if you're in the San Gabriel Valley, which includes Alhambra and Whittier, dial 448. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, dial 244, followed by talk. And in Compton, Lakewood, and the Long Beach areas, dial 639, and then talk. KBC time now, 20 minutes away from 11 o'clock. By the way, for those of you that are in the 805 area code, and Ventura and Canyon Country, and even over in Northern California and Central California, we have an 800 number for you to come in. It's toll free to you. The number is 800-262-8255. We'd like to hear from you, too. I'm Bill Jenkins with Leonard Stringfield tonight. Leonard, let's go to a caller and see what's on their mind, shall we? Well, first of all, I want you to tell me about the latest case you have before we do that.
Well, the most recent one is this in the stage of developing right now. I received a letter today to asking me to be sure to appear at the MUFON symposium, which is being held in Toronto in the next couple of weeks. Well, the docket's on the 4th of July. and that this person has some very, very important information to relate to me, but I must be there in person to receive it. I can't go into any detail what was in the letter, but that is an ongoing thing, and whatever this person has relayed indicates that some information from a very, very high general who has, I believe, some artifacts. And so I was planning to go to make the trip anyway to the symposium, so I'll have even more urgency to be there now if this person should show up with whatever he has. So that's an ongoing thing. As far as case histories, I had many. Just to relate a few here, touch base with a few in my current paper. One goes back to 1953 in Louisiana, near Camp Polk. The witness solemnly sworn what he had witnessed there. It was a retrieval of a bounty craft that was embedded into the soft soil. He observed, along with his buddies, one dead alien being taken out on a litter, and two injured aliens being helped by medics. And it was taken to the base hospital. And from that point on, everything was the highest degree of secrecy. This fellow has given me the complete report, everything that he observed, which is published in this paper. Another one, an excellent case, involved an aerial photographer who was assigned, amongst others, to a crash in New Mexico in 1954. His assignment was to take photographs of the craft and the body strewn on the ground from 40 feet in the air aboard his helicopter with a sophisticated camera, and then go on the ground and take photographs close up at a certain distance. His whole story, it covers many, many pages, is also in my current paper. An excellent case. Another one involves a guard who guarded, he watched it, a craft of some sort at Great Lakes, which had allegedly been shot down by the Navy back in 1973.
I'm going to have him give information here, so take it down.
And then another one involves a Marine in 1967 who was dispatched along with other Marines to an area he's not sure quite where, because the plane was in the air for some period of time, but he had reason to believe that the plane was circling to throw him off guard as to the destination. But anyway, he observed the craft embedded in the soil again, and his job was has sort of specifics to it, which of course is outlined in my paper. But he had undergone quite a bit of harassment when he returned to relate the information to me. He was warned in many ways, had visitors, all sorts of things. His story is just is a complete story in itself. Well, I have all of that in this paper, what happened to him later.
Now, Linda, you're talking about your paper. Now, you've given us crash retrieval syndrome number one and number two. You got number three out, is that what it is?
Yeah, number three is will be out in July.
All right, now, hold on. Can our audience, if they wanted that, can they get it?
Yes, what I'm suggesting here, Bill, let me just touch base there, because I know a lot of people will be asking you, and they're asking me later. Actually, it's a paper or a monograph. It's almost book size, which will be released at some time in July. It is now being typeset and should be at the printers in about a week. I'm taking orders in advance of those who want to take a chance with me. The estimated price is $10. Now, if it is less, why, of course, it would be refunded and closed in the envelope along with the paper. So the reason is $10 is because of the high cost of typesetting and printing.
It costs not
about
cheap.
$4,000 just for typesetting and printing alone, not to mention all the other. So I thought that would be a fair price, but it may be less than that.
Okay.
Now, the title of the paper is the UFO Crash Retrievals, Amassing the Evidence. It's called Amassing the Evidence, or it could be referred to just Status Report Number 3. It would be simpler just to say Status Report Number 3, as rather than try to remember the long title. The paper should be ready for mailing, I would guess, Bill, around the first week in August, so it's about a month away.
So, if you wanted to get it, what's the address?
My address, I'm mailing this from my home this time rather than to a research organization. My name, of course, is Len, L-E-N, Stringfield, S-T-R-I-N-G-F-I-E-L-D, The address is 4412 Grove Avenue, G-R-O-V-E, Cincinnati, Ohio. And the zip is 45227.
Okay, we'll give that address again for you. And if not, we have it on record here, and you can call Lita at Broadcast Information Monday or Tuesday whenever you want to get around to it. I think that if you really want to know about this and get another view from what the government give you, that you should get Lynn's report. Are you ready to talk to some folks out there?
Anytime.
All right, let's go to one. George is on the line. Right now, he has had a personal contact of some kind. George, what's your situation?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
This is a really difficult thing because I haven't spoken about this for a long time.
Well, welcome aboard.
Yeah, and it sounds tricky even as I think about discussing it. Anyway, about 10 years ago, I was part of a meditation group that psychically started to communicate in tongue with some energy forces that describe themselves as energy forces from other dimensions who traveled into this dimension in spacecraft.
Okay.
And what we asked, the information that we got was that some of the information we got was that they had the ability to change the molecular structure of themselves and their craft in this kind of an atmosphere. And what we asked them to do is to allow us to take pictures of them. And we asked, and we challenged them to change the molecular structure of their craft, to reduce the size of their craft, and bring it into a living room. And they gave us instructions of getting certain kinds of infrared film and cameras set up, and we would be focusing the camera on specific areas and took pictures. We were instructed to take pictures using the light they told us. And we had the pictures developed, and there it was. I mean, there are these spaceships, as clear as you can see.
What have you done with the pictures, George?
Well, we presented them to Stanton Friedman and to one of his associates many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing was really ever followed up with it, but I still have the pictures. And
I'd love to see them.
I would like to share them with you, yeah. I think it's really...
I'd really like to see them. Quite fascinating.
Well, the story behind it is even more fascinating than that, but I do have pictures. Yeah, how would you like me to do that?
Just bring them to the radio station. I'm here all the time. In fact, they got a room for me back here. I live here.
Is that right? Well, then why don't I call you when I'm available and make arrangements to meet with you, and I'll just bring them down.
You've got a deal.
Very good. And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing. It's it makes it safe for someone like me to speak up.
Well, I'm if I can do anything else, and Leonard, I think you'll agree with me on this, if we can get people to start talking about what they know that they've been afraid to talk about before. This is one of the things that you run into all the time, isn't it, Lynn?
Just a second, please.
Yeah.
Somebody's at my door.
I
hope it isn't the CIA.
Yeah.
No, it's my daughter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if we can get people, you know, to speak out about what they really know, that they've been afraid to speak out before, we're doing our job, don't you think?
Yes. I think that what you're doing is very important, Bill, because I think that it allows people to feel a little more flexible. That somebody like what you're saying and what I'm saying, if we can overcome the problems, why should they come forward?
I would be curious to know if your guest had anyone else had an experience similar to mine, because it sounds really way out.
Well, there is a lot of that contact that goes on, George, and... one of these days, maybe I can sit down and do about a 12-hour show here and put it all together. You just would not know what's in my library at home.
Really?
It's very hard to filter it down, you know, to work in a 2-hour show. But there is something of incredible importance going on that we seem to want to push to the side, you know. It's more important what's happening in the Falcons or, you know, Haig resigned. That's all child's play about what is really the reality of the world that we're living in right now. And that's one of the things that this show is all about.
That's so true. Well, I'm going to look forward to contacting you and getting together with you.
Well, I would look forward to meeting with you, George, and seeing the pictures and talking with you.
Thank you very much again.
Okay.
Right. Bye.
All right. Thank you very much. George talking to us. Let's go to another caller, please. Which one, Bob? We don't have one here? Let me give you the numbers so that you can get back into us. I'm talking to Leonard Stringfield tonight. We're talking primarily about the phenomena of the crashed UFO. Here are your numbers. In Los Angeles, the number to call for Talk Radio 79 is 520. That's 520 followed by the word TALK. Every talk radio number is followed by the word talk. In the 714 area in Orange County, dial 750. And in the 213 area, dial 448, followed by talk. The South Bay area, dial 679. And in the San Fernando Valley, just dial 990 and then talk. All right, you've got all of those. Oh, by the way, our friends out in the 805 area code or in Northern California, Central California, they listen to us at night. We have an 800 number for you. That's 800-262-8255. Toll free. Love to hear from you. Call on in and talk to Leonard Stringfield and myself. Hello, I'm Bill Jenkins. Fran, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hi. The question I have to ask is, what about the average citizen who might have had an experience and who did not take any kind of an oath? I had an interesting experience in 1955 on dry lake.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it's... I've never talked about it to anybody, and I didn't think... I just never occurred to me to do so. And I'm just interested. Is there any difficulty for the average citizen?
First of all, what kind of experience are you...
It was not a crash.
Well, in other words, you hadn't had an experience with a vehicle crash?
No, it was not a crash.
You just saw something.
Yes.
Well, that's a little different. See, now, as far as people observe what they observe, there's no problem there. Relating anything on that. It just involves the military. It's only where the military is involved where you run into secrecy.
Okay.
And there are not too many civilians involved. It seems as though most of them are due to crash landing in remote areas, and the military can get there first.
Yeah.
Now, they have all the advantages because their NORAD system can pick up, can detect a UFO that has a flight problem.
Uh-huh.
What I heard from the experts.
I think this was the landing site.
And they can pinpoint that object to where it's almost going to crash land and then get their forces in there from the nearest military base to do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the civilian activity would be reduced, of course. Now, those who have been involved, who did witness such a thing happen, are immediately contacted by the authorities in the area.
Yes.
And then advised to either
quiet
get it or other means.
Yes, I'm told to be quiet for 10 years.
Be quiet forever.
Yes. So they do manage to get to the few people, and some of them, of course, have been willing to talk. There have been leaks. People have talked. But see, the problem is, who's going to believe them? Because there is no case for this. Now, what I'm trying to do is to make this thing almost a household term where we can discuss it freely and openly, where people will come forward to relate what they may have seen. Now, in the past, people have been scared to death to come forward and relate. Either they've been judged as a nut for saying such a weird thing, they want to believe them anyway, or they fear because they've been told to forget it or else by the authorities.
Did you have the authorities talk to you at all, Fran, whenever you...
Yes.
What did they say to you?
It was the CIA.
And what did they say?
Well, it's long and involved. I was involved at the time. On a case, my fiancé was involved, and because of my fiancé, we were both under protective custody.
Hmm.
And it was while I was under protective custody, we had gone away for the weekend, and en route, we stopped by Dry Lake because I hadn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there that the experience occurred, and we were told to keep quiet. And a very interesting thing happened. We saw... which was undoubtedly what I would call a landing, with the turned up charcoal in the oval shape. Anyway, the next day when we went back, guess what? It was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told, of course, then not to speak of it.
Now, this was on a military establishment.
Was very Dry Lake, California.
Yeah. What year did this occur?
Pardon me?
How long ago?
About 1954.
Okay.
55.
A lot of activity then.
Yes, there were many of them that were downed in that period. We from our military position at that time, we had a very aggressive policy. The orders were in the Air Force to bring one down at any cost. I've been told.
Yeah,
and some had been brought down.
But there was no trace.
Now, by what means, I don't know. But
that was during the Eisenhower administration, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yes, that was a tough period. And
you had a real problem with that.
But now you observed something which seemed to have landed. That's interesting.
Yes, because there was no trace of any metal or any object.
Mm-hmm. How close were you to the event?
We were right there. We walked through it and around it.
Well,
it was a very, very large oval, all turned up with charcoal.
What size would you judge a diameter?
I would say maybe about 25 to about 30 feet.
Well, that's the popular size, yes.
And in the center was a turned up section. Now, this was a dry lake. Pardon me?
Have windows?
No, it wasn't. We did not see the object itself. Only the landing spot, the turned up, where the turned up charcoal or burned earth.
Oh, I see.
And a large oval with the...
But you didn't see the...
We did not see the object itself.
And then what did they tell you to be quiet about? Just the landing site?
That was be quiet not to say what we saw. Not to say that we saw that.
And who told you to do that?
Who had seen the object itself?
Pardon me?
Did you talk to anyone who had seen the object?
Well, the CIA at that time did not mention whether anyone had seen it. We had not. All they said, that the person who talked with us, said, just don't mention it. Now, the next day, out of curiosity, we wanted to go back and take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But it was leveled.
Oh, yeah. That's the...
There was nothing there.
That's what usually happens.
Pardon me?
That's what usually happens. They bring the bulldozers in to level the ground.
We couldn't find where it was.
That's right. That's what they usually do.
That's a standard operating procedure, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have some cases like that. Yes, where they go on. In other words, you go back the next day and nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's just the rocks have been brought back. They even plant trees if necessary.
Well, I think they did move a few bushes.
Yeah. Yeah, they replaced they transplant the bushes and so forth. Make it all look very natural.
They did.
It's an incredible thing for secrecy. They
good cosmetics, yes.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if they spent that much energy on doing something about our economy?
That's correct, Bill.
May I say something?
Yeah.
Well, then you know what I'm talking about when you're relating there your involvement with secrecy and the authorities, the CIA, as you say. Why, this is the sort of thing that I've been involved in, and all these people that I've talked with, which is getting close to about 100 now over the recent years, and they all have about the same story to relate. And it's just one story. One of the usual fear and of talking too much.
Fran, you're not afraid to talk about it now, are you?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact.
Well, obviously not. You do.
As a matter of fact,
talked about a million people here.
Well, now, you haven't given your name. Are you willing to associate your name with your story?
I certainly am. And
that's good.
Not
you
only
don't
that.
Have to, but I'm just saying, would you be willing to do that?
You know what I would like, Fran, if you would?
Yes.
If you could put that down in how many pages it takes.
Oh, God.
And send it on to me. And I will certainly put it in Leonard's hands and some other people's hands, if you don't mind.
I don't mind, and I'd like to add something else.
Well, make it quick, because there's our closing theme.
All right.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that there's other information I think you would be directly interested regarding the people visiting here.
Okay. You want to hang on, Fran? We're gonna break for the news.
But this is something that I don't think people are gonna believe.
Well, that doesn't make any difference. You hang on. We're gonna break for the news. Be back in about 5 minutes, okay? One of the places that the world really is, and one of the things you're going to have to learn to cope with in the coming years, is this matter of extraterrestrial life. Don't poo-poo it, my friend. The United States government has spent billions of dollars on the fact that it's there. And our guest tonight is Leonard Stringfield. He's speaking to us from Cincinnati, Ohio, who has spent a great deal of time studying this rather closely and with excellent journalistic credentials. And you can get the results of his work. Leonard, do you want to give us the address again and where we can get it?
All right. The title of the paper is The UFO Crash Retrievals, Amassing the Evidence, and it's referred to as the Status Report Number 3. It should be released, Bill, sometime in July. It should be available around the 1st of August. Good luck with me. The estimated price is $10. If it's less than that, why, each person sending in $10 will be refunded. So I'm taking orders right now. My home address is 4412. Grove Avenue, G-R-O-V-E, Cincinnati, Ohio, zip code 45227. So if you want to mail, take a chance. I'm mailing your money in advance. Why, I'll hold that until around August when the paper is published and send it off to you.
Well, like I just said, Leonard, I've known you a long time. They're perfectly in good company, so it's perfectly nice to do that. We were talking to Fran here, broke for the news. Fran, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you, and I'm sorry I didn't. I neglected to tell you how much I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you very much, Fran. Appreciate your board and the contribution you're making tonight. What were you going to tell us now?
Well, I'm trying to think. As a matter of fact, I think on second thought, maybe I shouldn't.
Well, no, that's okay.
Well, no, some of it...
On this show,
everything
goes.
Goes.
Right.
Well, on some of it, I would need permission from the other party.
Oh, well,
but
okay.
Let's put it this way. My fiancé at the time, he was quite a bit older,
mm-hmm.
and brilliant, extremely sensitive, and had a few weird disappearing experiences with him.
He just disappeared?
Well, yeah.
Well, you can't talk about it in complete clarity there, Fran, because you haven't got permission of your...
Well, that part I can't go into too much. In other words, I would talk...
What I would like for you... Well, what I'd like for you to do, because it sounds like it might be a fascinating story,
it
but
is.
You're kind of getting
it
on
is.
The...
It is. Bill, it is so unbelievable. Truth is
would
truth
you get with him?
Fiction.
Would you get with him and kind of put it in notes?
I can't do that. I will have to call...
Or call
New Mexico and find out. I don't know whether he's living or whether he's still or not. We've long since separated.
All right.
And, but this is... And he was in contact with extraterrestrials.
We have a... You know, a burning interest in that sort of thing.
Do you have anything there on that line to back up that?
Well.
Other than testimony, I mean, is there anything?
No, I can't say it on the air. I can't give details on the air, but I would like very much to be able to write some of this to you, Mr. Springfield, because I think it would be very, very, not only very interesting, but I think it would be probably helpful in some way to what you're doing.
Would love to have it. Send it to Leonard or send it to me or...
I didn't... I'd like to have his home address again if it's okay.
Let me go ahead and give it because that's
all
where
right.
Your book is anyway.
4412 Grove Avenue, Grove, Cincinnati,
okay.
Ohio.
Yeah.
Zip code 45227. What I could do, if you send a copy to me, why I can have it Xerox and send a copy off to Bill.
Well,
either way, let me assure you, Fran, that you're in fine hands there, and everything will be taken care of in the most discreet kind of manner.
But Bill, that is the thing I was concerned about. I've been approached to put this whole thing into some kind of narrative form for publication.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, it would blow some people's minds.
That's
and
what
if, I, if I give too much on the air, I think it might be the wrong thing to do at this time.
Not on this show, but that's all right. Why don't you get that to us?
Whatever.
Well, I will do this.
Why don't you get through that to Fran, and we'll have another show on this particular subject, and maybe we can get you on, and we'll talk even more in detail about it whenever you feel a little more free to be open with it.
That'll be fine.
Okay?
Yes.
All right, Fran.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind tonight. Leonard Springfield is my guest. Leonard has spent, the last 8-9 years?
Well, I'm specializing now on the last... Well, since my book was published by Doubleday back in 77, I've undertaken the project to look into the so-called rumor of the crash retrievals of the UFO. And what I've run into is astounding. Now, prior to that, I've been in research now ever since almost World War II, but this is my specialty today, and what I've opened up is a real Pandora's box, really.
It is, and the Pandora's box, I think, probably hinges... from the great proclivity of the federal government to keep all of our heads in the sand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hit it right on the head.
And they are absolutely wrong in that contention. Totally and completely, we don't want to give away any kind of national secrets, but the fact that the extraterrestrials are here, that they have crashed on this planet, is a fact of life, and we're going to have to deal with it, and we're going to have to cope with it. And we're amassing the proof despite the government. You know, the government is there to serve us and not to rule us. There to do our bidding, and it is to our best interest that we know about these things. And if it happens to upset your religious apple cart or some of the other things, so be it. Facts are facts, and life is life, and reality is reality, and that's what we want to get down to. Ready for another call? Here we go. Hello. Shell, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Hello, Bill.
Yes.
A question for Leonard regarding the occupants.
Okay.
Yes.
And I know that you mentioned that some of them were aided and assisted from their craft, apparently still alive.
Yes.
And I wonder if any of them have managed to survive any length of time. And if not, if their passing on was due to some sort of incapacity to handle the Earth environment, or if you know why it is they passed away.
Well, I don't have the absolute information on that, of course, but what I've heard from sources, several sources, would indicate that they don't live long exposed to our atmosphere or under our conditions.
Usually it's a radiation problem, isn't it?
Yes, it could be that or other factors, which I'm not aware of course, but it seems that in some instances they've lived very, very briefly. In other instances, they've had some kind of a life preservation system worked out in later years where they could live a little longer. Now, as far as their longevity is concerned, I do not know that, but I understand from several...
Perhaps the fear of becoming a colony or becoming overrun, which is probably one of the fears that we're being, you know, probably protected from.
That's one of the theories, yes. I've heard this expressed by some informants, that there was a fear that their long-range plan may be just that, that it is one of conquest. Although I can't quite buy that, because I think that, I'm not saying that the extraterrestrial is as benign as the one we've seen in this new movie called Extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
That's the benign type, but I really don't know. But that's difficult to answer, because there again, we had to get in some of the close encounter cases for that answer. We had to get into some of the abduction cases for that answer. And perhaps pursuing the deceased alien, the cadaver, as I am, in the craft, I may not have that answer, but... I think that they've been around long enough, that they're here for evil purposes since World War II. They certainly have had enough time to destroy us or occupy us, if that's their wish.
I think it would be pretty well said, Leonard, that from, I know that the vast amount of investigation you've done on this, and I have too, that we have seen very little evidence of anything hostile on
hostile,
our part.
That's correct.
There have been defensive activities.
Oh, yes.
But certainly never any hostile activities.
That's right.
And if you think about it, Shell, why would anyone want to come down and take over this place? It's an insane asylum.
You know, I've said this is an interesting, just take a moment here. This again comes from several excellent sources, including a medical, that one of the reasons, one reason for secrecy, because they have a very difficult time explaining to the world public. World, I'm speaking of the entire world and all its thoughts and philosophies and religions, that the Earth may have been a cradle of a civilization. In other words, the superior alien came down around the period of Cro-Magnon, or pre-Cro-Magnon man.
About 40,000 years ago, yes.
And then hybridized the Homo sapiens, which is us, of course. And so they come back periodically to check on our progress. So therefore, that's why they don't want to destroy or hurt us, because they're still watching us. We're still on the test tube, so to speak.
You know, we had a very interesting show about 3 or 4 weeks ago with Dr. Lee Gladden and his wife, Vivienne, who have gone into an extensive research, the etymology of the Bible,
yes.
For instance. We have seen artifacts all over the world that we were never able to understand until our technology gets to a certain point where we understand what they're talking about in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they are claiming that the Bible is doing the same thing, and it tells an incredible story of how this indeed happened with a group of people from Arcturus, which is one of the stars in the in Boot.
Mm-hmm.
They came down and they did a biological experiment in the Garden of Eden, what we would call the Garden of Eden. It stretched for 500 miles. It was about 50 miles wide from what is now Jerusalem all the way down to the Persian Gulf. And all of that, that's a sort of a secret language of the Bible that we're now being able to see when we get down into the root meaning of the words. And their book called The Heir of the Gods is incredibly fascinating reading.
It certainly would be.
And their research on it is just enormous. And that, of course, is still going on. And that would be something to read. that goes on how the Bible is really very accurate in a lot of the things that it's telling once you get by the mythical way that we look at it and look at what actually was being said. And in about 20 years, according to the Gladdens now, and they say according to the Bible, we're going to see some very, very dramatic things happen here on the earth as they come back. We have now gotten to the point where we can become a part of their society.
Well, see, this would create sort of a shockwave, you know, to the world public, if this were true. I mean, if we have some reason to believe that may be a possible, you know, what's behind the UFO, this would be very, very difficult to explain to the public.
We're going to have to start listening to that. You know, I'm Zechariah Sitchin, in studying the ancient Sumerian records, was telling almost the same story the Gladdens were. It was a little different twist to it, perhaps, but it was the same story of the aliens that came down and did some biological engineering, and all at once this hybrid creature appeared, which we call the human being.
Yes.
Now, we know that all of life on the earth has some sort of an evolutionary background to it, except for the human being. At a distant, a geological twinkling, it appeared about 40,000 years ago. The Cro-Magnon man was there. There's no reason for it. The you know, the Gannett newspapers, the Department of Energy, and Union Carbide Company had a huge conclave near Gatlinburg, Tennessee, in 1977, I think it was, in which they said that there will be that. Why are we searching for the missing link, the so-called missing link between, you know, the primitive life form that was here and the human being? It does not exist. So there's a lot to really support that contention, Joe.
Well, you know, when you get into the description, the configuration or the anatomy of the alien, the alleged alien, which I have from the doctor who worked on one, there is great similarity. He points out it's a about the evolutionary angle, and he is the one who told me that he attended a major international medical conference, which was top secret, included the Russians. That this was a great possibility that that the intelligence behind the UFO had come here, you know, back in primal times, primordial times, and done their thing in their genetics, and that how in the world would this be explained to the world? He said, "Well, he's correct. That's not his job to consider the sociological angle of the whole thing, but nonetheless, that that's what he related." But you know, I want to take just a moment here to read from my previous paper. What he describes.
Number two, yes, go ahead.
The little fellow that he worked on.
Yeah.
Is it okay now, Bill, or you want to hold off?
No, go right ahead and do it.
Okay,
you're
going to
talk about the.
I'm quoting now from a letter that I received an agreement with this medical source who claims that he performed an autopsy back in the early 50s.
This is a little man from Zeta 1, Zeta 2, Verticula.
I'm reading it now from the letter. The specimen observed was 4'3" and 3/8" in length. I can't remember the weight. It has been so long and my files do not contain the weight. I recall the length well because we had a disagreement and everyone took their turn at measuring. The head was pear-shaped in appearance and oversized by human standards for the body. The eyes were mongoloid in appearance. The ends of the eyes furthest from the nasal cavity slanted toward upward at about a 10-degree angle. The eyes were recessed into the head. There seemed to be no visible eyelids, only what seemed like a fold. The nose consisted of a small fold-like protrusion above the nasal orifices. The mouth seemed to be a wrinkle-like fold. There were no human-type lips as such, just a slit that opened into an oral cavity about 2 inches deep. A membrane along the rear of the cavity separated it from what would be the digestive tract. The tongue seemed to be atrophied into almost a membrane. No teeth were observed. X-rays revealed a maxilla and mandible as well as a cranial bone structure. The outer earlobes didn't exist. The auditory orifices present were similar to our middle and inner ear canals. The head contained no hair follicles. The skin seemed grayish in color and seemed mobile when moved. The above observations are from general anatomical observations. I didn't autopsy or study the head portion in any great detail, since this was not my area of specialty. Your drawing of the head, this is a drawing I submitted to him, your drawing of the head should have the cheekbones removed or a smoother contour. The eyes in the nasal cavity area are not right. The recess and fold is continuous across the forehead. The neck seems too long, but the shoulders do not slope as prominently. This may give you this effect. The arms are oversized in length by human standards. There was no thumb. The index finger in your drawing is no longer than the middle finger. I don't believe this is correct, but my memory is hazy at this point. The chest area contained what seemed like two atrophied mammary gland nipples. The sexual organs were atrophied. Some other investigators have observed female specimens. I have not had this opportunity. The legs were short and thin. The feet didn't show any toes. The skin covered the foot in such a way that it gave the appearance of wearing a sock. However, x-ray examination showed normal bone structure underneath. Now, that's the letter that the doctor who performed the autopsy gave me with permission to publish, as long as I didn't refer to his name or his hospital.
Does that help you, Shel?
Thank you so much, and we're looking forward to hearing that you've gone nationwide, Bill.
Well, I hope it happens. We'll see. We've got a lot of things to do around here.
Okay, good luck.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks again to both of you.
Appreciate your call.
Bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Leonard Stringfield tonight, and we're talking about the crashed UFO. They are here, the UFO itself, and we certainly welcome you to call. I'll be back in just a moment, so stay with.
Of course, I've never said that they've had green men.
Well, you know, the green man was...
gray.
But they're gray men, really. They look like most of them that we have seen are the reticulans. Their skin looks like, a mushroom.
Yes. You know, it always fascinates me when they come out with these pronouncements from Wright Pat or from the Pentagon, you know, about we have no little green men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no one has ever said that they had green men.
You know, that term, the green man, came from a story back in 1946 written by Harold Sherman, who is a wonderful man who lives in Arkansas right now. And he wasn't trying to tell that story. Harold is very psychic and very metaphysical, and he was trying to, you know, get something else across, but it seemed to catch on. And it still is kind of amusing to him that people refer to people from outer space as green men. You ought to read Harold's book, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think he has back in publication. He has done so many things. He's very, very active in this field. For a gentleman his age, he's a marvelous man. Let's go on now and talk. I think Clarissa's on the phone. He wants to talk about the Roswell incident. Hi, Clarissa, how are you?
Hi, how are you tonight?
All right.
I wanted to ask Mr. Stringfield.
I want you to speak up a little bit.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Sure.
If I participated in a group in Oakland in UFO 80 a couple of years ago.
By the way, we're talking to Clarissa Bernhardt. I can hear that. How are you doing, sweetheart?
Thanks. Fine. How are you doing?
All right.
Wonderful. I'm so interested in everything Mr. Stringfield has to say, and especially about the Roswell incident.
Clarissa, we've got a bad connection. Can you talk louder?
Now can you hear me?
That's better.
Okay, fine. Well, I wanted to say that I was very interested in what Mr. Stringfield has to say, and that in Oakland, in 1980, I participated in a UFO 80. That was attended by scientists as well as retired people from the Air Force and so forth. And a former CIA agent and retired Air Force officer at that time, who also was very patriotic and was not giving away, you know, information he shouldn't, said that after the Roswell incident, now what year was that?
47.
Okay. Coronet magazine came out with a story on the incident and giving all the details and everything.
That's correct.
Now, he said that being very loyal to the Air Force and everything, they told everybody to turn their Cornet magazines in, plus they tried to buy them.
That's correct, they did.
Now, I was wondering if there was maybe somebody out there that had not turned theirs in. What a collector's item that would be.
Bill Moore has copies of those, Clarissa, and he put them in his book called The Roswell Incident.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've been trying to get a copy of that. In fact, I refer to that in my current paper, that magazine, Coronet.
I think Bill has a copy if you want it, Len.
Who has?
Bill Moore.
I didn't know that he had one.
But, yeah.
I've been trying to get one. Several people have promised that magazine, but is that Pageant or Coronet?
It was Coronet.
Yes. I heard that it was Pageant, too. Now, it is Coronet rather than... Pageant.
Oh, that's what this man said at the time.
Uh-huh.
That was the name I was given. So I just wanted to ask you about that because I thought it was kind of a fascinating thing.
The authorities went out and took them all from the newsstands all the United States. Where were they distributed?
Would Coronet still have their files on
it? No, they went in and took the press. They took the plates and everything. They went to the office and confiscated everything.
All right. Well, I've had my own encounters and interest, and I think what your reports sound wonderful, so I'm getting my envelope addressed right now.
Thank you.
Hey, Clarissa?
Yes.
Is the earthquake still on for tomorrow?
I think the one that happened Thursday night, you know, about 100 miles from here up in San Luis Obispo, could have been it, but we've got one coming up around the 6th or 7th of July.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
listen, I enjoyed the show, and have a nice evening.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Maria.
You.
Bye-bye.
You probably didn't know what that was about, Leonard, but Clarissa Bernhardt is, but we call her the Earthquake Lady.
Oh, really?
And her psychic predictions of earthquakes are running about 99% accurate.
Uh-oh, she's predicted one for us, for the West Coast.
Yeah, she had one sort of on tap, but she thinks maybe the one 2 days ago may have been the one she was talking about. We keep track of them here. It's just...
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
If Clarissa had some electronic gadgetry there, they'd pay attention to her probably more, but she gets it from different sources.
Yes.
But we're certainly quite interesting in it. We've had her on the show a couple of times. She has something else.
This is a great learning age, you know, Bill. There's so many things surfacing today. Not with exactly what I'm doing necessarily is the key to everything, but I mean like what she's doing and others. It's good to have a show like yours where you can air, you know, your thoughts about somebody coming in and hitting you over the head. I think that's great.
They wouldn't dare because I've heard them if they did. I fight back. Let's go to another caller here. KABC, Craig, you're on with Bill Jenkins and Leonard Springfield today.
Yes, hi. You know, I'm kind of curious. Do you know, do their insurance rates go up after these crashes?
My insurance?
No, theirs. The visitors. No, really, what I called about... you explained how the people in the military have to go through these secrecy oaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, there's been a lot of cases where law enforcement people have been involved. What keeps them from talking about this particular type of incident?
Same thing, isn't it, Leonard?
He's a person in law enforcement has a certain obligation, I think, to assist the military in anything that comes up. And I think that it would behoove them to do as the authorities suggest. Mm-hmm. In other words, they could make it very difficult for them.
So there have been, a number of cases where law enforcement people have spoken about other types of incidents.
Yes, I'm aware. I've talked to a number of law enforcement people who were on the scene of an event or a retrieval or whatever, mm-hmm. in the proximity of an event. And the military would need their assistance often, as you can understand, you know, as far as relating with the general public or sightseers or whatever, or people just happen to be going through the area. And so the law enforcement has been involved in the past years in retrieval operations, or at least were aware of it. And I know of some that will not breathe a word. I mean, I get it from other sources, either from some member of their family or that who learned to relate a little bit. But no, usually direct contact with a law enforcement person.
Would you say that in these cases where there was tangible physical evidence, the military goes out of its way to make sure that they be quiet?
Bananas is probably a better word.
Yes. They have a way, a system to where they can keep people quiet.
Mm-hmm. Craig, and I think you'll back me up on this, Leonard, if you're a private citizen and you happen to happen on to one of these circumstances, you're going to be read the vow, the national security vow, and all of the ramifications that consists of, and you're now legally obligated by an act of Congress.
Mm-hmm. What is that act of Congress? That's interesting.
That's a National Security Act, isn't it? There are two different ones.
Yeah, so that's right. They can get you on all the espionage and all sorts of things that can throw at you.
Can you cite a specific act or whatever?
No, I could not in this case.
I have them in my files at home. There are two different acts that are used quite often. One of them is National Security, and I forget what the other one is. A National Loyalty Oath for whatever, but they say that this is...
The Espionage Act, they get you for...
It's very similar to the Atomic Energy Act, where any private citizen who comes up with any idea can have it classified and just taken away.
Yes.
Anyway, it works under that same kind of broad category.
Now, I'm also interested, recounting the story that the doctor told you,
yes.
There were a lot of references to various body parts being atrophied. Did he have any suggested explanations for that?
He was the person who mentioned to me that it's a throwback, going back to possibly Cro-Magnon times or in that period, where possibly the extraterrestrial came here and did some genetic work with the lower order of man and theirs, and then created the Homo sapiens. And he mentioned himself, how could we ever relate this to the world? I was very brief about it. He didn't go into a whole lot of discourse on the subject, but I mean, that was put to me very briefly, as though it were fact. He didn't say it was fact, but he just suggested that it was a possibility.
That comes up quite often, Craig.
I was wondering whether perhaps they suffered from their space flight or something. And all astronauts, when they're in weightless condition, for instance, suffer various types of atrophy,
Yes. Well, again, I have to know the conditions, I mean, there again, I don't have all that specific information in order to give you a good, sensible or a picture of what's going on. But, I mean, I get limited information from each source, but too technical.
Really hard for us to put our finger on their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And what is important to them may not be important to us at all, and vice versa.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay.
Now, this doctor, incidentally, who gave me all this information 2 years ago, has been advised to keep quiet. There has been no release of information from this medical source in the last 2 years, or about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All my questions have gone unanswered.
All right, Craig, I appreciate your questions.
Okay, thank you.
Stay right there with us, would you? I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Leonard Stringfield. We're talking about the crashed UFO they have and the bodies on board. They are there. You have some questions about us, give us a call. Back in a moment. Right now, we have a few lines open. If you want to get in, we'll try to get to everybody. The Talk Radio 79 phone number for the South Bay is 679, followed by TALK. The first three digits of every Talk Radio phone number is always followed by the word TALK. Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, dial 244. For the Valleys, it's 990 for San Fernando and 448 for San Gabriel. Orange County, 714 area, dial 750. And the 213 area, dial 448. Los Angeles listeners, call us at 520 and then talk. And for those of you up in the 805 area code, we'd love to have you. Ventura, Canyon Country, Sargas, Valencia, all of those good places, or Northern California. We have an 800 number for you. That's 800-262-8255. Let's go to another caller, Leonard, shall we? Hello.
Okay.
Bob, we talking to you?
Yes. This is Bob in Woodland Hills. How are you this evening?
Love to have you aboard, Bob.
I don't want to sound like the heretic of the evening.
Go ahead.
But, because I do agree with you gentlemen in a lot of respects with regard to extraterrestrials and spaceflight and us being visited. But I do have to take exception on a couple of points. And just to give you a little bit of my background, I'm a second-generation Air Force officer. My father spent 30 years in the service, and I got out as a captain, and both of us... we're in the space and missile program.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm saying, with no disrespect, I just can't go along with the suppositions or a lot of the statements of supposed fact that Mr.
Stringfield
is putting forth. Now, I look at my own experiences of being virtually all across the United States with my father and myself in the missile and space program from, back in the, I can remember back in the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And, we never ever heard of any situations like these gentlemen are describing. And if anything, we were, close as anybody in terms of being able to hear of it.
Did you hear of any reports at all of encounters by the military with the UFOs?
The only thing that we heard of was occasional instances of sightings, trackings, this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
as far as
landings or crashes, nothing.
No intercepts?
No. And, intercepts in terms of sightings by various aircraft and jet interceptors.
Yes.
But as far as one-on-one contact, no. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing that bothers me, I guess, is your whole premise seems to be so laced with, I just wrote down three statements that you made. They have a way of keeping you quiet. They can get you. Advised to keep quiet. Now, I think if anything,
this is based on what the people have told me.
Oh, no question. And
Bob.
Excuse me.
I said we even had one of the callers on tonight. Now,
who was saying the same thing? I heard the lady. She was advised to keep quiet. But what I'm saying is,
I've talked to a lot of people who have had the same problem. Now who knows whether they're telling me the truth or not?
Right.
But that was there.
I'm just saying
one thought here, Bob. In my paper, I use the word alleged quite often.
Right.
practically every case, I come out with my comment on the whole thing is no conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because who am I to make a conclusion on a subject so great? What I'm doing here is reporting information given to me by what seems to be reliable people, and to, you know, in our discussion or whatever, the way I got the information, I'm putting it here straightforward in the best ability for the reader to make a judgment. I make no conclusions, so I use the word alleged throughout the whole paper practically in every case.
Well, I just see all these alleged landings or crashes and military medical people helping aliens out of the spacecraft and into the hospital, and then
that's correct.
You know, all these things. There's just no way in my mind, and I think if anything, through the last decade, where, for example, the Defense Department employee sued Nixon for coming out against, I guess it was the C-5A project, where he was told to keep quiet, and he, I guess, went to the Washington Post or whoever. There's just the massive cover-up that would be entailed to keep this type of information quiet. There's just got to be too many leaks available.
But this is what they tell me. I've talked to, in recent years, over 100 people who have given me the very same type of information, what has happened to them, their fear of reprisal, and so forth and so forth. And again, in my position of listening to this type of information from independent sources from all over the United States, they're all saying about the same thing. It gives me good reason to believe that somebody's telling the truth.
Well, Bill, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Why is it that when we hear about reports of UFO landings or extraterrestrials visiting and making contact, why do we always hear them of, two guys who, didn't get out of the sixth grade down fishing on the bayou in Mississippi, rather than with the advanced state of the intelligence of these people? Because I firmly believe they're up there and that they've got the capability. Why aren't they making contact with more people in authority or people, who are going to be able to utilize their technology?
Well, there are a number of stories, Bob. Again, I have to say stories and use things alleged. Now, but we have a case going on in Charleston, South Carolina right now where hundreds of people are seeing this happen all of the time,
mm-hmm.
all over that particular area. We've had stories where contact has been made with high government authorities, and what happens is that they now want technology to give themselves a leg up on the other nation,
mm-hmm.
and that's not going to work with them for whatever their reasons are, and perhaps they're not interested in one nation having some leg up over the other. We do have some pretty good stories about how that has happened. Some incidents out at Nettles Air Force Base and at Edwards Air Force Base where this has gone on, and the prime interest of those in authority is technology and power, and it's not going to work that way.
Because I have talked to generals at four-star rank, right on down to airmen who have been either medics or radar operators, and numbers of times this has been the topic of discussion. And I mm-hmm. just maybe it's a different group or different segment of the service that I was associated with. But
now that very well could be. I don't think they're too very selective about that, but we do know that there's a great deal going on. I have talked to a lot of people. I'm just really not privy to talk about it here on the air. Who I have an incredible respect for.
That's my case too.
I have have an incredible respect for their credentials. Some of them are war heroes, in fact, whose names you would instantly recognize, who know that this is going on and have been privy to it themselves.
Okay. Just an example, Bob, in my current paper, I have a naval captain, officer, pilot, who has told me that he had seen the craft in a hangar at Wright-Patterson in 1963. And he is now a airlines pilot. He asked not to use his name because of his position with the airline as a pilot. But he was a naval pilot, a captain. And he's given me the name of four other people who were with him, also naval officers, who had seen the craft at Wright-Patterson. I have that case published in this current paper. Now, there, I consider that person as an outstanding, technical-minded and a credible person. I'm just taking that as an example.
Well, listen, enjoy your program. Thank you much.
All right, Bob. Appreciate that kind of input. We need
that. Yes, indeed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm Bill Jenkins. Leonard Stringfield is with me from Cincinnati. We're talking about the UFO, the crashed UFO, the reality of them. They're here. And we'll be back in a moment.
Hi
there.
Hello, Bill. I think your show is great. It heightens my enthusiasm for living.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad KBC let you carry on with it.
They've been with me for about 4 years.
Right. I have one quick question. Len, I think I heard you say that other governments have retrieved these crashed UFOs.
This is what I understand.
And do you have some explanation for how you get over the decades such complete cooperation on secrecy of so many governments? They don't cooperate on other things very well.
Well, I don't get this from the governments. I get it from sources that in that particular country who are in touch with correspondence with American researchers.
Yeah, but those other governments have retrieved them, and they have that intelligence. How do you get all those governments cooperating so well on the secret?
That is something that baffles me, because we can't get along on any other matter.
That's right.
We get along on the... in other words, this thing must be so powerful that they've all agreed somewhere along the line that this thing's got to be hushed. I don't know how that's done. That is one of the enigmas of the whole problem. That's one of the big enigmas.
Well, Bill, if you can't break down our government, maybe you can work on some of the other ones.
You know, the thing that... strikes me about that, Alan. It's a very, very important question that you just posed, and that is that what we're dealing with here is so important that it makes the political and economic differences exist between the United States and the Soviet Union and the rest of them just pablum, child's play. And we have some very smart people that are in government in all nations, and they realize that. And within the next little while, I think it's all going to be laid down in front of us. Because whenever that is laid down in front of us, we're going to have to change all of our spots.
I think a lot of the technology is done here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it gravitates here. Like from South Africa, there was a crash near Johannesburg. In that part of Africa, there was one allegedly in Spitsbergen, which is Norwegian. And there was a report that I received recently in East Germany. There's supposed to have been some
East Germany.
Well, I'm aware from a former CIA source that there were two in Russia that he was aware of, also in China. So it is a universal thing. Now, I've often asked myself, supposing one would crash in, Uganda and Idi Amin, who was a real recalcitrant type of individual, how would he behave if one crashed there? That was my question.
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, if that group over there got a hold of it, they wouldn't know what to do with it.
Wouldn't know what to do with it anyway.
It took us 20 years to get one operational here in the United States.
We have eyes and ears worldwide to our satellites, and we know when there's a UFO, it's in trouble. And if it's pinpointed going into a certain country, our ambassador level or CIA people everywhere can be in touch with the proper authorities to make the move.
Oh, really?
All right, listen, I hate to break it all up, gang.
That's all right. That's a good answer. Thank you much.
We could talk for hours. Leonard Stringfield, thank you for spending so much time with us in the middle of the night in Cincinnati.
It's late, but I'm glad to be with you.
Hey,
I have a question. One point here, it's very important for my paper, but I have two magazines. One is Cornet, one is Gadget. For that one, the case that if we get a hold of one of those magazines.
Yeah, if they can get it to us or get it to you.
Which magazine is it? I've heard it was Pageant, and I've heard it was Cornet.
Well, let's see. I think Clarissa said it was...
She said it was Cornet.
Yeah.
From one of my sources, he said it was Pageant. I'd like to have that clarified, if that...
Well, if anybody knows it, contact me. I'll get them on to you, And we have run out of time. Lynn, can you get back on with us in November or December somewhere?
Yes, I need your address, Bill, to send you a paper.
All right, I'll put you on hold here. As soon as we go off the air, I'll get you the whole thing.
All right.
And get back with you. Thank you so much for spending the night with us.
That's quite all right. It's a privilege to be with you.
It's always a thrill when you're on because it's a mind-boggling situation you always give us.
Oh, boy. Well, I just hope that I can get more fruit in the future.
Right. Thank you. Leonard Stringfield, I'm Bill Jenkins. Open mind. We're out of time. Stay with us. We'll be back with Nora.
As it was moving, it appeared to be tilted on its sides. This should be of interest to what you were saying. And appeared to be moving in jerks, but did not stop at any time and finally disappeared from view. There's a large corner house there on Cajon and Highland, and this woman was in there taking a shower. She wrote me this letter. Her interview I don't have with me, but here's her letter, which corroborates what Mrs. Mignot says. It says, Dear Dr. Seth, this is not much of a clue, but I'll pass it on anyway. One night, about 10 p.m., I saw a very bright light, too high to be a street light, and much too bright for that, too. It seemed to be at the southeast corner of Cajon and Highland. I did not think of a UFO. I wondered what it was, did not go out in the street and try to see. And from this angle, I was looking at it from my bedroom window, which could only see what appeared that it appeared to be about three times as high as a street light. It did. It did not flicker or change color, but was still just as bright when I went to bed. The next day, when I passed that corner going to work, I looked to see if there was anything unusual at that corner that might explain the light, but saw nothing. As my analysis of her after an interview with her, Mrs. Mignot's statement seems to have been strengthened by the testimony of Mrs. Parker. In examining the area, I would say Mrs. Parker's bedroom window would place her in a good observation point. A statement of three times as high as a street light would put it just above the level of the trees. The room from her bedroom places the object just southwest of the corner trees. Her view of the bright light must have been the underside of the object, as it would be too high above her house to see any other detail. Judging from the portion of the ground lit up in describing Mrs. Mignot's, I would estimate the diameter of this object to be at least 30 feet, possibly as much as 40 feet, and so on. I can show you John's reconstruction of that, too. I have a slide there. Could we throw that one on? And then I have a paper I'd like to read to you. I'm going to stick my neck out a little bit. I never did agree with Dr. Condon's conclusion. And after all, I was in the process of writing a book in which I have several technicians, scientists, writing articles for this particular book. This is one of the articles that's going to be published within. Take it for what you want. I never said that these things were from outer space. I merely said we can't explain it, but I do not discount the possibility of where these things actually originated. Being a scientist, I'm not narrow-minded. I can approach any subject with an open mind and to prove one way or another. As a scientist, I've done a lot of research and different projects. What difference does it make to me how the data is going to come out? Where after the facts of how to prove certain scientific phenomena, whichever it comes out, that's what we're trying to find out. What difference does it make how we try to frame it? The trouble with scientific data, or any data, in a lot of cases, data becomes useless if the person interpreting the data doesn't recognize it as data. However, I want to read this. It's rather short, and doesn't amount to beans, but want to give a little bit of a kick in one direction. And I've entitled this, An Extraterrestrial Hypothesis for the Origin of UFOs. I'll just read it. In recent conversations with colleagues who are specialized in astronomy, I have become aware that modern astronomers agree that of the hundreds of billions of planets existing in our universe, an estimated 2 to 5 billion of them could contain life as we know it. Even if the greater percentage of these are discounted, one could hardly suggest that none of the planets which contain life are which conditions for life are adequate, have included intelligent forms of life in their evolution. We would even ignore the possibility of life based on other than carbon atoms, because our imagination would stagger if we were to attempt to describe a day in some life not as we know it. With our home planet as a known example, I've got to break down. You know, when you get to the open point, my wife bought this tie for this occasion. With our home planet as a known example, the quality essential for the evolution of thinking creatures who have harnessed flight has been 4.5 billion years of time. 2.5 billion of these years was spent preparing the Earth for habitation, and almost 2 billion more have elapsed before the appearance of the thinking creature about 1 million years ago. This does not suggest that the evolutionary rate is a constant, because as on our planet, it was determined by a unique combination of events. But an awareness of our Earth's history does provide a reference by which to determine sequences, variables, and relative rates of change. Although early man conceived of flying, and for over 2,000 years, many of the principles of flight have been understood, it has been less than 70 years since the first manned heavier-than-air craft has flown successfully. In the spiring technology of those few intervening years, we have been able to put men on the moon. It is difficult for us to imagine what stage of interplanetary travel we will have achieved 1,000 years from now. But certainly, the only limiting factor, at least according to our present scientific knowledge, is the speed of light. In the vastness of space, it would take over 4 years at the rate of 186,000 miles per second plus to reach our nearest neighbor of over 7 trillion miles distance. As we reckon time, with our lifespan of about 70 years or 70 revolutions around our sun, this becomes a rather unsurmountable obstacle facing interstellar travelers from the planet Earth. But travelers from other planets are not necessarily restricted to our 70-year lifespan. The Earth-Sun relationship is the basis for our concept of time and for the divisions into days, years, weeks, months, so on. If our planet were Pluto, our year would be nearly 250 Earth years, and consequently, our way of looking at time and our resulting lifestyle might be very different. Of course, we recognize a distance of over almost 4 billion miles from our sun makes Pluto far beyond the habitable range, and so it's useless to consider the possible achievements of the inhabitants. Our planet itself is able to support life only because it is a proper distance from the sun. It is close enough for the sun's heat to provide the necessary energy and light, and distant enough to sustain a specific atmosphere and be protected from the more powerful rays. If the sun controlling other planets is larger than ours, which would be the case in most solar systems, the orbit of a life-sustaining planet would certainly be more than 93 million miles from its star. Here, a 250-year revolution becomes feasible, and flight in space, which may involve several Earth years, might not appear nearly so ominous to inhabitants of these planets. Accepting the hypothesis that there are many planets which contain life as we know it, we would truly be audacious to superimpose our evolutionary rate and our concept of time on them. If they are thousands or possibly even millions of years ahead of us in evolution, and if their concept of time is 10 or 100 times ours, the hypothesis of an extraterrestrial origin for UFOs does not seem too fantastic after all. Thank you very much.
Seth would come back up here, and you people can stand up and talk loud, raise your hands first, and perhaps ask a few questions. And Mr. Sanders will tell us all where the local restaurants are for the dinner hour. We will be back at 7 with 3 more speakers and another question and answer session.
I'd like to ask at this time that you restrict your questions to the speakers who spoke this afternoon, because some of the things you might otherwise ask will be covered in the evening session. So if you have any questions,